You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. It is September 11th, which I said at the beginning of the show, that's a date I did not know it was until we went on the air and I looked at the dateline. But it is 20 years to the day. We covered that in the first hour, so we won't revisit that. But welcome back to the program. We are live from the heart of Dixie, Alabama tonight. It's a remote broadcast, and everybody that you're hearing this evening are live with us on location. And what a great first hour it was with Brad Griffin, with Rick Tyler. Had a little fun with Eddie Miller as well. They did a really good job. I can't say with confidence we can do better than they did going forward, but we will do our best to hold serve, and I think I've got the guy that can do it. It's Dr. Michael Hill. A great friend of mine, a great leader for our people, a man who has put his name on the line, a man who has suffered for our cause, and if you haven't done that, you're not worthy of the title of leader. Chief Hill, great to have you back. Always great to have you on this program, especially great to have you on this program when we're together in a location like this after an event such as the one we had today. To be in the same room always carries a little extra energy.
Yeah, it does, James. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's always good to sit around and be able to see the people you're talking to. we had a great weekend. I was very, very pleased with the speakers were great. I mean, I knew they would be. I mean, look at the lineup.
That's why you booked them.
Look at the lady damn straight. That's exactly why I booked them. And they all came and they all performed extremely well. I talked to a lot of people. I just got back from the venue a few minutes ago, and there were people still there helping clean up.
Hours later.
Well, I told our people, I said, look, you know, we need to leave the place cleaner than we found it. And I felt like a hypocrite if I'd run off and not help. So, but no, we had great speakers on both days. And you've had two of them on, or three of them on so far, Eddie.
And we're not done.
That's
now
right.
Now we got you. Well, we got Sam and David coming up. We're going to try to knock them all out.
Absolutely. And, you know, to be able to put this caliber of speakers all together on one lineup is just amazing. I mean, what other movement other than this, you know, hard right white Southern nationalist movement could you find that? I don't think you can. And I'm so grateful for people's willing participation in something like this. So,
well, as I said a moment ago, It means more to me now because the price to pay is so much more severe than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You've been in this longer than me. I've been in it my entire adult life, 17 years on the radio, 20 years in the cause at large, going back to the Buchanan campaign of 99 and 2000. But, hey, I mean, and if there's one guy we could bring as an example tonight of a guy who continues to do his duty against such unjust duress, it's you.
Well, I kind of put myself in this position. I got nobody else.
It's like the Godfather. Is it the God? Is it that line of the Godfather? This is the business we've chosen.
That's right. It is the business we've chosen, and we knew going into it what the stakes were. And you know, I said all along, when the enemy finally gets serious about what we're doing, they're going to unleash their big guns on us. And you know, they're experts at not actually fighting, which I would certainly welcome.
But well, you look like it. I mean, so we've got Brad, his wife. We got Rick still in the room. Others are coming. This is just obviously a secure location, a private location. The only people who know where we're broadcasting from tonight are the people who are going to be on the show. Brad, does Michael Hill not look like – I say this all the time. Does he not look like the prototypical Celtic warlord, what they would have looked like? I mean, this guy right here, I believe he would like to fight if he could.
Well, I must admit, I have enjoyed it before. But, you know, I'm so grateful that the enemy is, like Sam Dixon said today, doing exactly what we want him to do. And he is afraid. When the enemy lashes out at you like he's lashed out at us since Charlottesville, it shows you that he is afraid of what we're doing.
Let's talk about one example in the news this week, and that is the desecration of the Robert E. Lee, this beautiful piece of art in Richmond, Virginia. Now, people ask me, do you get upset? Do you writhe? Do you seethe? Do you shake? I don't do that. Obviously, I don't like to see it, because this was a man far greater than any of his detractors could ever be. Robert E. Lee was probably the most Christ-like, the greatest American. I put him above George Washington. I put him above anybody. Robert E. Lee was the American, the greatest American. So obviously, this is a man who should be honored. But when I see this come down, I don't get mad. I really don't get mad. I don't get upset. I say, what makes you laugh today can make you cry tomorrow. And when the shoe's on the other foot, we need to remember that these are the rules that the enemy has chosen to play by. If and when we regain institutional power, and it can happen, things happen in history. They happen. I don't know how. I don't know what will be the catalyst. I just know things can change. And when it does, that Mao statue of King in the mall, that can be quartered, and that can be desecrated. I mean, what one man can do, another can do. Things can change, and history may be written, but the future is not. And people say, well, did you see all those young white girls who were cheering the desecration of the Lee Monument? Did you see that? Yeah, I saw that. I saw that, but we were talking about this in the last break, Michael. When power shifts, everybody becomes a true believer of whoever's in charge. That's the thing you've got to know about human nature. I've talked about this so many times. There are just a handful of people on either side of the ideological spectrum who have inflexible beliefs. The vast majority will fall in line with whatever is trendy, fashionable, a path to power or financial sinecure in vogue. And when we take control again in the future, everybody will have been toting the line, and they will have all been, as Renee said a moment ago, they will have always been true believers.
Yeah, that's right. You know, what you take down can always be put back up. I'm like you, James, in a sense. I don't get passionately hot angry about something like this. I have rather what you might call a cold anger. You know, I can
see. We see it. We don't like it. It's stoic, and we learn from it, and we understand
right.
that
it's stoic.
It can the same when the shoe's on the other foot. The same can be done.
It's a stored up anger that will be released at the proper time.
And we talked about this last night at supper. That beautiful equestrian monument. What a monument to a man greater than probably, as I've said before, any American. They could never have come up with that sort of art. They can only destroy. You see our people versus their people. You see our architecture, our monuments versus their graffiti, their vulgar, disgusting graffiti. They can only destroy. They cannot create. They cannot create anything beautiful. They can only destroy. But we can rebuild.
That's exactly right.
And will
we
rebuild.
Shall.
And this is not over, ladies and gentlemen. It is not over. Do I believe it? I do believe it. I do believe we can win. I do believe we will before it's all said and done, but not before things get worse. And they may get worse, and if that's what it takes, if that's our elixir, let it happen. We'll be right back. Michael Hill, everybody. Sam Dixon just walked in the room. We'll talk to him soon.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
We've got one more segment with Dr. Michael Hill. Let's not forget this man. He's known for his work with the League of the South, obviously, in our circles and in the greater media at large. But let's not forget he was a university professor. He's written two scholarly books, one of which was a very popular fundraising incentive for our audience a couple of years ago, Celtic Warfare. This is Michael Hill. We've got him for one more segment, and we'll transition over to Sam Dixon as tonight continues. Dr. Hill, we were just talking in the break about the reinterment of General Forrest, which I want to remind one last time. Now, we've had Gene Andrews on. Gene Andrews is the former commander of the Tennessee Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. He's also the caretaker of the Nathan Bedford Forrest Boyhood Home. So we've had Gene on, well, many times over the years, but two times very recently to talk about the arrangements for the reinterment. Things are always subject to change in this society. But right now, the reinterment of General Forrest and his wife will take place in Columbia, Tennessee at Elm Springs, which is the SCV headquarters, next weekend. The funeral or the reinterment will take place at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, next Saturday. They will lay in state on Friday at Elm Springs, and I believe right now at least also on Thursday at the Boyhood Home in Chapel Hill. So that's all coming up less than a week away now as we sit here tonight. And remember, scv.org, you can go if you want to get more information about the arrangements. But we see the sickness and the pure unadulterated hatred that our enemies have to the extent that they will dig up the bones of our heroes and force them to be moved. This is, you know, we are told we hate other people because we want to survive. We want our culture and our heritage and our people to survive. To want to survive must mean some subconscious hatred of the other. I've never seen any of our people do what we see our adversaries do on a daily basis. Burn down cities, desecrate monuments, dig up now the very bones of our heroes.
Well, we're civilized people, but there is an extent to pass which you don't allow your enemies to go. And I've got mixed feelings about this Forrest reinterment.
Speak freely.
Well, first of all, I don't think we ought to allow the enemy to dig up the bones of our heroes under any circumstances. You know, I was in Ireland for a good while back in the early 80s, and the IRA had a standing policy there of, you know, every nationalist house that you burn, we burn three of yours. And you could apply that here.
Well, the only thing I would offer in response is that if it were my father, I would want him to be able to rest in a place where his monument isn't splashed with red paint, where he's not spat on, where people aren't coming up and doing all these things. Now, if you can't stop that, which obviously the authorities in the city of Memphis had no intention to do, then if it was my direct – now, he's collaterally, I guess he's all of our ancestors because he's a hero. Yes. But if it was my direct ancestor, I would say I wouldn't want his grave to be subjected to that treatment.
I understand that, and that's why I have mixed feelings about it.
And that's the mixed feeling.
Yeah, that's the mixed
Obviously,
feelings.
The other side is, how dare they be able to do this, and how weak must our people be to allow the very bones of our heroes to be subjected to this
that's
sort of
exactly
treatment?
That's exactly it, James. I mean, this is simply a manifestation of the fact that we've lost our cities. And if this continues to happen, it's going to be to our eternal shame that we Southerners can't protect the cities, the metropolitan areas that our ancestors developed.
This was another thing we were talking about in breaks. Now, we've talked about the polls that Brad has cited at Occidental Descent. Brad did a great first hour commentary. He was a great guest. And talking about how amongst white Republicans, what is it, Brad? I mean, if I just shout it out, what, 30%? 30%+ of white male Republicans, when asked if they have what their view of white, so-called white nationalism is, they say they either have a very favorable or a somewhat favorable view of white nationalism. Now, that's 30% of white male Republicans. That you're talking about millions of people. And that's something you mentioned today, Dr. Hill, and that is there are more of us than there are of them. They can pick us off one by one if our people could ever get somewhat organized. And it will take a catalyst for that to happen. That's not something any of us are going to be able to do. The point is this. Another gentleman I met at a recent event cited a very esoteric but still scholarly and data-driven study about how even a population as low as 10% of a population throughout history have had the ability to turn the tide in nations. It's not going to happen right now where there's so much comfort, but I the point is this. The point in everything that I say right now is this. I do feel as though within a percentage of the people far larger than the opposition would lead you to believe, there is a simmering just below the surface that if given the opportunity to vent, some things could happen. We talked about recent events in South Carolina that were put on by a mutual friend of ours that drew over 1,000 people, not associated with any group. It was just a folkish-type pro-Southern event, Confederate flags everywhere. When the river is allowed to flow naturally, it leads back to favorable places.
Yeah, we're looking at the sort of the iceberg here, if you will, with very little of the iceberg visible above the waterline, but a lot of it just, as you said, below the waterline. This movement is a lot larger than it would appear on the surface, is what I'm trying to say. And the more the enemy pushes us, it's just like Sam Dixon said again today, the enemy's doing exactly what we want them to do. They're revealing themselves for who they are. And as that happens, we have a choice. We can knuckle under to them or we can resist them. And I think most Southerners, in fact, I think most you know, real dedicated patriots in the West, Europe and America both, will choose to fight back. I certainly pray that's the case.
Well, step over that. I obviously, and it should go without saying, I'm not advising or encouraging or endorsing anybody to go out and do anything that is extra legal. Don't advocate it. Don't think about it. Don't do it. But I looking back at history, we know this to be true. Systems can be overwhelmed a lot easier than you think. I mean, the system here can be overwhelmed by again, going back through history. Regimes rise, regimes fall. The American experiment, as flawed in the thinking as it was, has lasted less than 300 years. I don't think it'll make it to 300 years. Things rise, things fall, nations rise, nations fall, systems of government. This is going to be no different going forward. This cannot last. This racially diverse country will not last. It's never lasted in the history of in the annals of recorded history, and we're going to be no exception. It's coming apart at the seams. This system will be overwhelmed, and that will present an opportunity, obviously.
There's no American exceptionalism involved in this. The line between order and chaos is a very fine line. And once chaos starts breaking out, it comes in a hurry.
I've received this letter from a listener in Florida, a handwritten note, as everybody can see, and we get a lot of these every week. We have, of course, like everybody, been deplatformed from being able to process online contributions. We can't even send emails anymore to our email list. People who voluntarily subscribe to get email updates from us, we can't even send out. And this listener wrote this with a nice hand-drawn Confederate flag. You see, this is Alan in Florida. Alan writes, "Dear James, you can't take a credit card, you can't send an email, but as long as you can get mail, I'll send you a check. And when they cut that off, I'll drive it to you myself." That is the
Amazing.
Spirit of our people. That is the spirit that you exhibit, my friend.
Amazing.
That's the spirit of the South, and
Absolutely.
With the Confederate flag, handwritten.
That is a great story. I'm looking at it right here. It's true, folks.
I'm not lying.
I'm looking
you.
At it.
Dr. Hill, go get you some supper. We're going to bring on Sam Dixon and then to close the show tonight.
Thank you, David, sir. Always good to be with you.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The nation is marking the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. At the National Memorial site in New York City, there was a moment of silence at the exact time the first plane hit the World Trade Center. President Biden and his wife Jill were there, also President Clinton and Hillary, and President Obama with Michelle. President Biden also visited the Flight 93 Memorial near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and he also made a stop at the Pentagon. Vice President Harris spoke in Shanksville.
"If we remain united in purpose, we will be prepared for whatever comes next."
Former President George W. Bush also spoke in Shanksville. Former President Trump spoke in New York at a firehouse and a police station. This is USA Radio News.
Do you have an idea for a book? Fiction, nonfiction, or a children's book? We can help you put it together and bring it to market at Dorrance Publishing. We have thousands of testimonials from people just like you that we've helped get their books sold in stores and online. We've even got a service called The Writer's Coach. It's perfect for people that have a book idea in their head and they just need someone to help them put it on paper. Dorrance Book Publishing has been helping people just like you who have a book idea, written or not, for over 100 years. Imagine being counted among the most famous authors in the world with your very own book. Call right now and let us help you turn a book idea into reality. It's easier than you think. You just need a little help. Call us now.
800-876-9035. 800-876-9035. 800-876-9035. That's 800-876-9035.
Leaders from around the world are also marking the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. USA Radio's Brad Bernards has more.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the 9/11 terrorists failed to shake our belief in freedom and democracy.
"On a crystal clear morning, terrorists attacked the United States with the simple goal of killing or maiming as many human beings as possible. And by inflicting such bloodshed in the world's greatest democracy, they tried to destroy the faith of free peoples everywhere, in the open societies which terrorists despise and which we cherish."
Prince Andrew has been formally served with court papers in a sexual abuse lawsuit filed against him by Jeffrey Epstein accuser Virginia Giuffre. The documents were handed over to a police officer watching over Prince Andrew's home in Windsor. He has 21 days to respond. Prince Andrew has repeatedly denied the allegations. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, we're back now. I have so many friends in this movement, but Sam Dixon is at the tip of the spear. The respect I have for this man for so many reasons perhaps matched, but never exceeded. And my wife loves Sam Dixon as well. She called in today to check on us, and Sam and I just happened to be on the way over to the event, and we were able to talk to her for a minute. But I'm just going to read Sam Dixon's bio very quickly that was read before his remarks today. This is a remarkable thing. If I just read this alone, it would make for an interesting segment. Sam Dixon was one of the earliest advocates of the creation of an ethnostate for white Christian Europeans on the North American continent. He has represented many individuals and groups stigmatized and demonized by the system. He represented the Roswell, Georgia camp of the Sons of Confederate Veterans in 1996 when he successfully defeated an effort by elements of the Olympic Games leadership to prevent the display of the Confederate flags during the Games. All of his male ancestors living at the time bore arms for the Confederacy. He has framed next to the door of his house a Confederate bond. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Featuring his paternal cousin, Dushka Pickens, the daughter of the governor of South Carolina, who lit the fuse for the first cannon shot at Fort Sumter. Now, hey, let's just pause for a moment and just look around the room. Now, is that not a patrimony? Wow. He has been a featured speaker at meetings, rallies, and conferences all over the world, including appearances in Britain, France, and Russia. He speaks Russian and attended the commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the 1917 murder of the Tsar and the royal family. And we actually had Sam on for a two-week special series to talk about that particular trip, and I still remember that well. He's a graduate of the University of Georgia Law School. He served as a captain in the U.S. Army. He's a member of the Presbyterian Church, the John B. Gordon Camp, Sons of Confederate Veterans, and the Sons of the American Revolution. He was selected for Who's Who among American lawyers, and Sam is the author of a widely distributed monograph entitled Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln. Wow. We stand in the presence of greatness. But Sam, of all of that, and it is worthy. He's shaking his head. You told me, one of the first things I ever remember you telling me, and I have learned, you and Bill Rowland, I have probably learned more from you two men than anybody else in my life outside of my own family. You told me, do not be falsely modest. So do not be falsely modest, Sam. I'll return that to you.
Well, but so much of that is not really a personal achievement.
You got to get it right like
right
that.
Up like this. Okay. Well, so much of that is just not really a personal achievement. Traveling to Russia is not much. And
this guy.
Being related to people, you know, that's simply
freak. Let me ask. What is it like to know you descended from the man who fired the cannon shot at Fort Sumter?
I'm not descended. She's simply a cousin.
So a collateral ancestor, yeah, I guess you could say.
Not an ancestor at all. But it's nice. You know, I have a feeling in South Carolina of being at home. I never understood why my parents moved to Georgia, South Carolina. We went to South Carolina, and we related to everybody. And
you had people from the upcountry up in Pickens down to the South Country, Charleston and Ravenel. We talked about this last time I was in Atlanta
I wish we were related to the Ravenels, but we're not. But anyway, my parents were cousins. They were descended from the same sets of French Huguenots. And so anyway, you know, there you have it. But I love Charleston. I feel when I'm walking around the streets in Charleston, I feel a sense going back centuries. My mother was born only a few miles from where her ancestors were buried, who arrived in the 1600s as French Huguenot refugees. My father was born within 12 miles of his ancestor from Ulster, and who is buried near Anderson, South Carolina. And so, yeah, I feel a much greater sense of attachment to South Carolina than to Georgia.
And yet, every time you're on, we play a song associated with Georgia.
Georgia on my mind.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not a good song.
Midnight Train to Georgia. Yeah, if it's a black song about Georgia sung by a black artist, we try to play it for you. But
I clearly recognize that there are many talented and great black people, and I've known some.
I like the songs. You know, I'm a 60s pop aficionado. You probably cringe at that. But in any event, okay, let's talk about the Lee Monument. You had some interesting an interesting take on that's worth repeating. But first, I would read this statement from former President Trump. Now, we all have our opinions on him. The hope of 16 and him being a chaos type of guy that could throw a wrench into the system versus what he was ultimately able to do or not do and what was really going on with all of that. But the Columbia Bugle, which is a popular Twitter account, writes, a New York real estate magnate, television host, gave a more cogent defense of General Lee and Southern heritage than the whole gaggle of accented Republicans currently representing Southern districts and states in government. And this is what Donald Trump had to say. I just watched the massive crane take down the magnificent and very famous statue of Robert E. Lee on his horse in Richmond, Virginia. It has long been recognized as a beautiful piece of bronze sculpture. To add insult to injury, those who support this taking now a down plan to cut it into three pieces and throw this work of art into storage prior to its complete desecration. Robert E. Lee is considered by many generals to be the greatest strategist of them all. President Lincoln wanted him to command the North, in which case the war would have been over in a day. Robert E. Lee instead chose the other side because of his great love of Virginia, and except for Gettysburg, would have won the war. He should be remembered as perhaps the greatest unifying force after the war was over, ardent in his resolve to bring North and South together through many means of reconciliation and imploring his soldiers to do their duty in becoming good citizens of this country. Our culture is being destroyed, and our history and heritage, both good and bad, are being extinguished by the radical left, and we can't let that happen. That was Donald Trump. And say what you will about him, and anything good and bad could be said about him, and it would probably be valid, but the point still stands. That was a better defense than we heard from any representative of any Southern district, any Southern governor, any Southern House member, any Southern senator. First, your reaction to the statement. And again, he was known for giving good statements but never following it up with action. Of course, he was only the president after all, and I don't say that necessarily tongue-in-cheek, but your reaction to that statement and what is ultimately going on here and how maybe it's a good thing.
Well, it's a very eloquent and gracious statement. It should be received as such without any quibbling about any quarrels one might have with the record of Donald Trump. It stands in stark contrast, as the New Yorker said, between the insipid or non-existent statements of white Republicans from the South. Overall, this is a bitter pill. It will anger many of your listeners, but I think we can rejoice in a way in this. Like you were saying, it shows the extraordinary hate that motivates our opposition, who, in what psychiatrists call projection, point the finger at us as being haters with three fingers pointing back to them, because they are the haters. But it removes the illusion for Caucasian Americans that we are in any way represented in the system, even in the South. It awakens people to the fact that we have no stake in the system, and the system is our enemy. And that the system is our enemy, whether it's the governor of New York, Cuomo, or whether it's the President Biden, or whether it's the governor of Virginia. These people are our enemies. They hate us. They are sold out to people who hate us. And this is a good thing. It also represents the complete and final failure of the civil rights movement. The idea that any black person will be better off next week because Lee's monument came down is simply laughable. There won't be one fewer black baby born into a single family household. There won't be one more black who stays in college. There won't be one more black businessman. It will have absolutely no effect. And you can understand how desperate the what I call the poverty pimps, the people who run things like the King Center and the NAACP must be, because their remedy has failed so totally. Dr. King and the others felt that if the races were mixed in the schools, black academic performance would soar, and that the differences between the achievement on average between the races would be erased. Well, their experiment has been tried now for three generations, and we never hear of any statistical information showing that the black IQ increased 8 points, or black scores on SAT tests, jumped 150 points 5 years after the massive busing plan in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I like to ask people who still believe in this system, can you cite me any study that showed that the desegregation theory or experiment brought any positive results in terms of increased black academic performance? They will look at you and they'll say, that's crazy. That has to be so. And I said, I don't think that's so at all. I don't think there are any studies that show that. And if there were studies that show that, you know that you would have heard about it from Dan Rather on 60 Minutes. There would have been articles in the New York Times magazine section and so on. But they aren't.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Sam Dixon. We will be back with them for at least one more segment coming up right after these words. We are live in the heart of Dixie in Alabama with Dr. Michael Hill and others at the League of the South 2021 National Conference. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things, and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Your call is being transferred to the listening ear. Listening professionals dedicated to hearing you.
Hello, listening ear. Who am I listening to?
Carrie, but I was calling my mom.
Yes, you were, but your mom was so busy she felt it was important for you to have someone who could completely focus on listening to you and you alone. So she subscribed to our service. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Where to start? Well, I can listen to school issues like science projects. I can listen to boy problems, although that's an extra $3 per call because of the emotional drain on me. How about we start with how you wish you had made cheerleader?
I didn't try out for cheerleader.
This isn't Mary?
Carrie. I'm Carrie.
Oh, sorry.
There is no substitute for a loving parent. And when you really listen, love is what they'll hear. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Back here with you live from Alabama at the League of the South 2021 National Conference, and Sam Dixon is our guest for these two segments, and then we're going to have an encore with everybody in the third hour. Everybody gets to say a parting shot that's still with us, but that's after David Duke joins us at the top of the hour, next hour, our final hour. But we were talking about the Lee Monument. And, Sam, I saw a photo from the archives of when that monument was dedicated, and tens of thousands of Virginians were there to celebrate the dedication of it back in the 1800s. And then, of course, we fast forward to 2020 during the age of Black Lives Matter, when the grotesque and tacky graffiti, the height of the art that apparently those artists were capable of, was affixed to the monument. And then, of course, just this weekend when the monument was taken down and the cheering rabble there. What changed? What changed? The only thing that changed was the demographics, the racial demographics. And when that changed, there was just no chance. I think that has to be the common denominator. That has to be the catalyst. That has to be the thing that we have to look at here. It wasn't necessarily culture. It wasn't necessarily upbringing. I mean, you can go to the rural South now. You can go to the Ozarks now, and the culture is the same as it was in the 1800s, by and large. But the people changed in Richmond. Richmond is now, I think, 46% white in the city itself. And so the results are predictable, are they not?
Yes, they're absolutely predictable. The Virginia Supreme Court handed out a decision that was widely criticized on the internet among our circles. But the court was right. They said change times, things change with the times. I remember the founding meeting of the League of the South. There was a guy of some sort of Hispanic heritage there from Missouri. And he and several people were very angry when I said that the South was going to be majority non-white, and unless we address racial issues, all these monuments would come down. And they said, they literally said.
And what year did you prophesize that?
Oh, this is 27 years ago.
Wow. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen.
It wasn't a prophecy. It's just obvious truth. I mean, when it reads history, a new people comes in, they don't preserve the monuments of other people. When the Muslims conquered Spain, the first order of business was to destroy all the monuments to the Romans and the Visigoths, to seize the churches and to turn them into mosques. And that happened all over Spain. New people were in charge. The Christian stuff had to go. And that happened again in Greece, in Constantinople, when the Muslims took Constantinople. And these people are now conquering us. They're going to have monuments to their heroes. But you can't expect anything else. They have a right to monuments to their heroes. We have a right to ours, but
okay, pardon the interruption, ladies and gentlemen. We had a little bit of technical difficulty with the internet connection. We'll try to resolve that before the third hour. So we're going to just pass over this speakerphone here, if we are live and back on the air, and I assume we are. Okay, we're back. All right, again, apologies, ladies and gentlemen. This does happen on a remote broadcast. So, Sam, actually, we're off of that right now. We're here over the phone only, and I'm going to try to reconnect with the studio via the secure connection. We were talking about just before we went off about how when the demographics change, obviously people are going to erect monuments to their heroes. They're going to take down the monuments of the heroes to other people. And that's what happened in Richmond. It's the easiest thing to understand. It just makes sense. But when we got cut off, I was talking to you about how when the Taliban retook Kabul, they took down the monument to the hero of the American Empire, George Floyd. And you were making a comment on that when we learned that we were disconnected. So I'd ask you to hold the phone just like this and speak your truth about what happened and how dangerous that may be to the Taliban.
Well, they actually painted out a giant mural of George Floyd the Americans had erected. And I was commenting that they don't realize how dangerous that is. That's the kind of thing that could provoke the Biden administration into nuking Afghanistan, the blasphemy of attacking George, of wiping out George Floyd's mural. But the Afghans have their country back. We never had any business being there. And it's a defeat for the regime. It is not a defeat for our people. It's only a defeat for them. And this interventionist foreign policy was always a mistake. Bush took us into these two wars. There was no reason for us to go into those two wars with Iraq and Afghanistan. And we have spent over $6 trillion, wasted it, to try to bring feminism and gay rights to Muslim countries. And that money could have been used, sufficient money, to have built a nationwide speed train system along the lines that the Red Chinese had built for their country. But no, what do we have? $6 trillion in canceled checks into the pockets of people of the ilk of Lynn Cheney and her odious father and the military-industrial complex and several thousand guys dead and several times that number in wheelchairs or psychologically ruined. That's what this regime has brought to us.
Mr. Producer, we may be back on the connection if you can try to reconnect us via the normal methods. Okay, I think we're back.
All right, so Sam, we can go back to the mics now. So well, there was actually one thing that I'd like to get your response to, and that was something that Brad brought to my attention in the first hour, and that was that this is, of course, the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and so as might have been predicted, George W. Bush was given a microphone today, and he said, well, Brad, actually, why don't you come and join? We have only 2 minutes remaining. This is your story because you were the one who informed me. So now I'm going to give Brad my mic, Sam. You keep yours. Brad, just give him the headline and let Sam respond. We have 2 minutes remaining this hour.
Oh, of course, George W. Bush was trotted out to compare January 6th to 9/11 and to compare the domestic extremists to the foreign terrorists that attacked us on that day who are really two sides of the same coin and overlap and being motivated by nothing but hatred and stuff. So,
well,
you can imagine.
Actually, the truth is we were targeted because we've involved ourselves in other people's quarrels. The Bible says a man that involves himself in the quarrels of other people is like a man that takes a dog by the ears. And we were retaliated against because we provide the bombs that Israel has rained down upon Lebanese and Palestinians. That's just obviously common sense. What I hear in the media and on National Public Radio and the New York Times is they're oozing and oohing and aahing about the civil rights of Muslims that were violated by the police putting undercover agents to observe Muslim organizations. We've lived with generations of FBI harassment of white identity advocate groups. They've never shed a tear over the violation of our civil rights, which have been much greater than anything the Muslims have suffered.
All right, Sam, with about a minute remaining, the final word is yours, my friend. Before we come back with the third and final hour, we'll try to do a roundtable discussion. I really like the idea. We've got so much talent in the room. Just giving mics to anybody not named James and letting them kind of powwow together. But a final word to you out to the audience tonight on your reflections of this weekend, your talk, and everything else. We've got about 60 seconds.
Well, I think we should be of good cheer. I'm not one that despairs over things like deplatforming. As I said in our meeting,
I remember not long ago a world in which there was no platform from which to be deplatformed.
That was a good point today. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
And we are much stronger than we've ever been before. And our enemies are doing everything we would have them do. And events will argue for us in a way that no amount of Madison Avenue propaganda on National Public Radio and the New York Times is going to be able to conceal or distort. The facts are coming home to the American people. The fools, the silly people that voted for Biden and stuff, they're going to get what they voted for. They're not going to like it.
Brad Griffin, Rick Tyler, Michael Hill, Sam Dixon, you've heard from them all tonight, and we're not done yet. You'll hear from them again if they're willing to stick around. You might even hear from a lady tonight. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with the third and final hour right after this.
Pool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.